You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
But now, we're taking a more upside-down look at history by asking if the future can influence the past, at least at the quantum level.
Yes, that's right. This concerns research into retrocausality by FQXI physicists Ken Wharton of San Jose University, California, and Nathan Argerman at the Nuclear Research Center Negev in Israel. The pair published their account in Reviews of Modern Physics in April. Now, you've heard us talk about quantum paradoxes many times on the podcast in the past. Particles can be in two places at once, for instance, or become entangled with other particles so that their behaviour is linked across vast tracts of space, as though they can communicate instantaneously, seemingly defying Einstein's prescription that nothing, not even information, can travel faster than the speed of light.
And we've discussed how there are numerous different and equally valid ways of interpreting quantum mechanics to try and make sense of them. You can go back and listen to the Schrödinger Squared special edition from December 2019 to hear us compare some of them in detail. Some might say excruciating detail.
Others might say that we were just being thorough, and there's nothing wrong with that. Anyway, one interpretation we didn't cover was Wharton's favourite, retrocausality. I spoke with him earlier to find out why he's such a fan of this little-known but intriguing interpretation of quantum mechanics, and what the word retrocausality even means.
Yeah, it's a scary word. In fact, in this paper, we're rebranding it. When you have a model of physics, you have certain knobs that you can imagine turning. Like, well, what if this were different? What if that were different? What's different in my model if I turn this number to that? So forward causality is what we expect, is we expect that when we input different numbers in our model at one time, we see the effects happen in the model at later times. That's kind of intuitively what we expect models to do. A retrocausal model would be the opposite. In the model, if you turn a number to some value and you notice that other values corresponding to earlier times are also correlated with this change you're making, that's a retrocausal model. Generally, people don't explore retrocausal models because they're counterintuitive.
So in a retrocausal model, you will turn some knobs and twist some numbers, and something that appears earlier in your model is affected by the kind of twists and turns and changes that you make later.
That's right. That's exactly right. The cause is your intervention. You're changing some parameter in your model. You run the model and see what happens. And if your model is retrocausal, the effect is some parameters in the past will depend on your inputs.
So that's a wild thing to say. So give us an example of where this has happened in an experiment.
What if you had a double slit experiment? So a double slit experiment is the idea that you can send a particle through a pair of slits, and you can choose what sort of measurement you make after the slits. You can choose, do you want to measure which slit it went through? That's choice one. Or do you want to look at this interference pattern that occurs after it passes through both slits? And in quantum mechanics, if you look to see which slit it goes through, it only goes through one slit. But if you look instead to see the interference pattern, it looks like an interference pattern produced as if it went through both slits. So in a retrocausal model, you have an input into the system, a cause, and it's how am I going to measure this particle? Am I going to measure it in way one, where I look at which slit it went through, or am I going to measure it in way two to see is there an interference pattern? In a retrocausal model, you could say if you measure it in way one, it will only pass through one slit in the past. But if you are going to measure it in way two, then it will pass through both slits in the past. So that is an example of a retrocausal explanation of the double slit experiment. The universe kind of finds a solution to this problem, and the solution takes into account what's happening later as well as what happened earlier when the universe kind of solves itself and says, okay, this is what happened.
So what does the retrocausality picture imply about the nature of time? When we talk about Einstein's theory of relativity, for instance, we often say that it gives us a view of reality in which the past, the present, and the future all exist on equal footing. As humans, we experience time flowing in a certain direction, but in some sense, everything is already out there in a block universe. Is that what retrocausality is saying too? That somehow these quantum experiments have access to future events and past events equally, even if humans don't?
Let's go back to this idea of the block universe. And Einstein has some wonderful quotes about this, about how the difference between past, present, and future are just an illusion. And they're all there in some sense. The reason people who don't like the block universe don't like it is they couple that very simple idea that things did happen yesterday, things are happening now, and things will happen tomorrow. Those events are part of our universe. And they couple that with forward causation. And forward causation says, well, these events in the future are caused only by events in the past. And those two things together make people not want to ascribe a fixed reality to events that happen tomorrow because they have control over them. But it doesn't change the fact that something will happen tomorrow. So those events that will happen tomorrow, those are perfectly fixed events in a retrocausal model. They're not fixed in a causal sense. They're not fixed in the sense that we don't have causal control over them. But they are fixed in a physics sense, in the sense that something will happen. And so separating out those two notions of fixed is a tough project. But that's really all I'm asking here. To say there will be some setting that Alice chooses at the end of this experiment. And she has control over it. She absolutely has control over it. But those settings, then, in a retrocausal model, would influence everything that has come before. They would cause what's come before.
So let's turn to your paper now. You talk about Bell tests, which are experiments showing quantum entanglement in which two particles become linked, showing correlations that can't be explained by classical physics. When measured, the particles' behavior and properties will always tally, no matter how far apart they are separated. It's as though the two particles can communicate faster than the speed of light, which irked Einstein. What were you hoping to show by analyzing these experiments in a retrocausal framework?
Okay, so the only evidence for needing a retrocausal model are these experiments in quantum physics. And the most ones crying out in need for some sort of explanation are these experiments, in particular, something called quantum entanglement. And this was exactly the topic of what's become known as Bell's theorem. Basically saying, if I want to model these entanglement experiments, I need to break something that we think is intuitive. He called it local causality. And he said that if you assume local causality, then no model can explain these experiments.
There are a couple of different concepts wrapped up in the term local causality. You've already explained causality, but what is locality?
Indeed. In fact, that was one of the main purposes of writing this paper, was to try to disentangle the local from the causality. The intuitive sense of locality is the idea that there are intermediate local mediators between two events. Let's do an example. Let's do a light switch and a light. We're all used to that, right? By all appearances, this is a non-local effect. I flip a switch on a wall and the light on the ceiling goes on. But we know that there must be some local mediator, something between the switch and the light on the wall. Maybe it's a wire running through the wall. But there's something between the two. It's not jumping over the intermediate space and magically turning the light on. And so that is our intuition of locality, that if two things are causally connected, there's got to be something in between, something physically in between correlating these cause and effects.
Many interpretations of quantum mechanics get rid of locality. How do they do that?
Yes, so most models of quantum entanglement, including conventional quantum mechanics, has to break one of these assumptions, either locality or causality. Most people don't think about breaking the causality assumption. So they naturally want to break the locality assumption. So how can you do that? The most common way to do that is you have parameters in your model that don't live anywhere in space. In the model, you have parameters on the wall, parameters on the light, but you also have these parameters that don't live anywhere, and they communicate with both.
So now the way you framed that, giving up locality already sounds pretty strange. So why are physicists often keener to do that than to give up causality?
That's an excellent question. I think there are several answers. One is that Bell and Bell's theorem and the subsequent discussion of Bell's theorem doesn't stress the causality assumption. In fact, usually doesn't even lay it out mathematically. And so it's not evident in the papers as, oh, why don't we try relaxing this instead? The second reason is that people's intuitions of causality, I think, are deeper and stronger than our intuitions of locality. just is human nature, maybe.
Well, then let me ask you, as a fan of retrocausality, why would you prefer to go against human nature, in your own words, and intuition?
We shouldn't trust our intuitions about which of our intuitions are wrong. If we know one of them is wrong, we should go through them all and explore all the possibilities. And the reason I really want to explore the idea of giving up our causality intuition is because we can save our locality intuition. We can save the idea that there are physical mediators between the beginning of these entanglement experiments and the end of these entanglement experiments, not spooky action at a distance. And if we could save that intuition, I'd actually be willing to give up a different intuition. I like to point out that we have these two different theories of physics that don't talk to each other. We have theories of space and time and gravity from Einstein, and we have quantum theory. And the reason they don't talk to each other is because quantum theory uses these mathematical elements that don't live in space and time. That is the essential reason why you can't combine these two theories and make sense of them together. But if you were able to get all the parameters back into space and time, you're allowed to have this local mediation between causes and effects that live at particular places and particular times, then suddenly reconciling these two great theories becomes a whole lot easier. In fact, I would think that even, I would say trivial, that if we got a full retrocausal but local model of quantum theory, I would think that, at least on paper, steps to unite gravity with quantum theory would be almost obvious.
That was Ken Wharton speaking to Zia about retrocausality. On the podcast page, fqxi.org/community/podcast, you could find a link to Wharton and Argeman's paper and more information about retrocausality.